Hello, this is Don, a reading on Tuesday, May 23rd, and I'm going to be reading the Vermilion County Commercial News today. The first article at the top of page one is headlined, City Man Arrested After Saturday Shooting, Dateline Danville. City police arrested a 37-year-old Danville man Sunday in connection to an East Side shooting that left a local man with a head injury the night before. According to a press release from Danville Police Criminal Investigations Commander Joshua Webb, officers responded about 9:15 p.m. Saturday to the 900 block of Harmon Avenue on a report of a man being shot. At the scene, police found a 41-year-old Danville man with a non-life-threatening wound to his head. Webb said the injured man was taken to an area hospital where he was treated and released. During their initial investigation, officers learned the incident had actually taken place in the 1200 block of Chandler Street, Webb went on to say, where shots had been fired following a dispute. Here's a quote from the release. Danville police spoke with several witnesses, and due to their cooperation, a suspect was identified. That is the end of the quote. Shortly after 8 p.m. Sunday, police took 37-year-old Anthony A. Williams into custody, the release stated. Webb said Williams is being held at the Public Safety Building on preliminary charges of aggravated battery with a firearm. He added all further information on Williams' arrest or charges will be directed to the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office. Danville Police continued their investigation into the incident. No further information was available Monday morning. City police also continued their investigation into the May 13 fatal shooting of Rodney Crosby. Police said Crosby was outside his home in the unit block of Kentucky Avenue the night of May 13 when shots were fired from a passing vehicle. Crosby was hit and later was pronounced dead. Anyone with information about these incidents can contact the Danville Police at 431-2250 or use the Crime Stoppers. The telephone number there is 446-TIPS, T-I-P-S. Or 446-8477 to speak with someone unanimously. And on the front page, there's a big, beautiful picture of the city pool looking very lovely in blue and in all of its great color. The city pool is going to open. Danville Recreation Manager Cindy Parson talked Monday to new Garfield Park Swimming Pool Assistant Manager Cherry Carpenter about pool chemicals. The city's public swimming pool opens for the summer on Saturday. And accompanying the picture is an article about the pool getting ready, being prepared for the summer, with fewer public workers, auxiliary workers, to help get the Garfield Park swimming pool ready to open this year. It helped to have an AmeriCorps group in town. The 9-member AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps team helped Habitat for Humanity of Danville, but pitched in on some other projects, such as painting the city swimming pool. Danville Recreation Manager Cindy Parsons said that members were a big help. City officials might look to apply to have a group help with city projects in the future. Last-minute preparations are occurring this week for the pool to open on Saturday. The water at Winter Park's Ambucks Playground for Everyone will also be turned on Saturday. Danville Superintendent of Parks and Public Property, Steve Lane, said the timer is set from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. for those free water features at the play area at Winter Park. The play area is open from Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day weekend. City budget cuts affected auxiliary workers, but not the number of lifeguards and staff who will be on hand for the 70-plus days the swimming pool is open to the public this summer. The pool closes August 11. We're pretty self-sufficient out there, according to Parsons. Parsons said they staff the pool with 5 lifeguards who start at staggering times. Additional lifeguards are added as needed if the pool gets busy. The city hires 14 lifeguards for the summer. There are 2 new guards with the others being returning lifeguards, and there is a lifeguard meeting today. There will also be two assistant managers this year. Josie Heron will return and will help with pool parties, and the new assistant manager is Sherry Carpenter. Carpenter is learning about pool operations this week, and she said she's looking forward to her new role rather than just coming to the pool for fun and family. The water in the pool was a cool 64 degrees on Monday morning. Air temperature must be at least 70 degrees for the pool to open, Parsons said. The new motor pump and filtration system purchased during the winter is working great. There will be swim lessons, aerobic classes, and other events such as pool parties at the pool throughout the summer. Pool parties are from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. and cost $200 or $100 for the spray ground only for up to 100 people. That concludes that article, and here's an article, Dateline Georgetown, from the Georgetown City Council. Logo raises public workers' question. A question was raised concerning city employees wearing shirts that have the logo of a private trucking company while they are working. Tony Ellis, Georgetown Supervisor of Public Properties, said the shirts were given to city employees free of charge, and that city employees liked wearing them because of their highly visible safety color. Alderman Darren Alexander asked the council if the city couldn't furnish the employees with some type of shirt and jackets with printing on them to identify city employees. Alderman took no action on the matter, citing that no money had been appropriated for such purposes in the new budget. Also, Mayor Darren Ridnour made his first committee assignment since being elected mayor, naming Lucas Salheimer, Dennis Davidson, and Tim Waterman to the Finance Committee, Waterman, Mike Scott, and Chris Hudson to the Personnel Committee, Alexander, Jeff Bridgewater, and Randy Scott to the Water and Sewer Committee, and Salheimer, Hudson, and Davidson to the Ordinance Committee. That concludes that report from George. Here's another story from Danville, the Vermilion County Health Department reports. The WIC program opens up a walk-in clinic. The Vermilion County Health Department's Women, Infants, and Children program has started holding twice a month walk-in clinics at the Danville Housing Authority offices. The Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, all known as WIC, is a federal nutrition initiative that provides nutritious supplemental foods, health care referrals, breastfeeding support, and nutrition education to eligible pregnant and postpartum women, in addition to infants and children up to age 5. The clinic at the Housing Authority office, 1607 Clyman Lane, will be open on the first and third Tuesdays of each month from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m., with a one-hour break at noon. No appointments are necessary. The satellite clinic at the Housing Authority will be open to the public and not just to residents of the Fair Oaks Public Housing Complex. The Health Department hopes to offer the satellite clinics in the north and south portions of the county in the future, according to Public Health Administrator Doug Toole. And that concludes that article about the WIC program clinic. Here are some community events coming up in Danville. The first is a breakfast program. The weekly Breakfast on the Patio at CRIS, C-R-I-S, resumes 7:30 to 9 a.m. Thursday and will feature John Gibson, manager of Habitat for Humanity's Restore. His presentation will begin at 8:15 a.m. The cost is $2.75 for those 80 and older. Attendees should register in advance by calling 217-443-2999 by noon, May 24th. That's tomorrow. Here's another luncheon set. A women's lunch is set. The Danville Christian Women's Connection invites all area ladies to a luncheon at Danville Boat Club on Wednesday. Doors open at 11 a.m. with lunch served at noon. For reservations, contact Kathy at 217-474-9996 or Sharon at 765-793-3296. And the American Legion Post 210 will have its regular $5 spaghetti dinner beginning at 5 p.m. today. The Dixie Hire Band will play from 5:30 to 7:30. All ages are welcome. In Catlin, the Antiquarians will meet at 7 p.m. today in Catlin Sith Town Hall, 109 South Sandusky Street. Todd Reddy will present a program on foreign currency. All are welcome. And finally, the Tilton Village board members are going to meet at 6 p.m. Thursday at the Village Hall at 1001 Tilton Road. The meeting is a continuation of the meeting of May 18th. For information, you can call the Village Hall at 477-0800. I'm looking now at the editorial page, and here's an editorial in today's paper. All should join in this fight. Vermilion County communities face a common problem with the flood of problems caused by the use of heroin, other opioids, and methamphetamine. Law enforcement can't battle the problem alone. It takes everyone to make a difference. Many people avoid the issue. They just ignore it. They refuse to educate themselves about the issue and hope the problem simply go away. They will not. Vermilion County already has recorded several accidental overdose deaths this year. Members of Danville's Elks Lodge 332 and others hope to change that mentality. The lodge will sponsor a panel discussion about drug abuse at 6:30 p.m. Thursday at Turtle Run Banquet Center, 332 East Liberty Lane. The event is free and is expected to last about 2 hours. Participants will talk about the problems locally, what to watch for, what help is available, and how people can join the fight. Local, confidential treatment options are key to helping those who want to escape the hole drugs can create. Non-judgmental support for those seeking help will encourage more people to take the step toward recovery. Several area churches have started their own programs, working with those who use drugs to help them become clean and sober. This problem requires more than just longer prison sentences for offenders. To mount an effective battle against these drugs that are taking lives, a multi-level approach of law enforcement, treatment options, health care, and continued support are necessary. The most important element, however, is the commitment of the whole community to end drug use. That concludes that. Here's an editorial about funding our public universities. This is in the today's paper, but it's a reprint from the Southern Illinoisan in Carbondale. Fund our public universities. The state is running out of time. That shouldn't be surprising to anybody, but it really seems like our lawmakers in Springfield don't realize what is going on. We're quickly approaching 2 years without a state budget. That's nearly 2 years of little or no state funding for our universities, our social services, and everything else. That spells big trouble for Southern Illinois University Carbondale. Let's face it, the situation is pretty serious. There are some in the state who say the budget won't be reached until after the 2018 election. Southern Illinois University Carbondale is not alone here. Other state universities are in the same boat, some even worse. In a story in today's paper, Kent Redfield, a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Illinois at Springfield, said, quote, "If we have no movement until after the 2018 elections, I think it would be a certainty some universities would not open that fall. I think Eastern, Western, Northeastern, and Chicago State are all at the top of that list. The Carbondale situation is pretty tenuous as well." Is that alarming enough for the folks in Springfield? We hope so. Those five universities equal nearly 35,000 students, according to spring 2017 numbers from the Illinois Board of Higher Education. According to the same numbers, there are 156,000 students, 156,882 students enrolled in the state's public universities. For those scoring at home, that's nearly 22% of the state's students. Think about it for a second. Do you think students are going to enroll in a university that may not open? The answer should be pretty resounding no. Do you think students are going to stay if a university may close its doors? Again, no. And think about this. That would be up to 35,000 students leaving the state for college, paying more for out-of-state tuition. Nobody wants that. It's a problem, something that Jack Ticknor, interim director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University Carbondale, called a brain drain in today's story. We're losing some of our best and brightest in the state because of the impasse. That's no way to get the state on better grounds. In order for Illinois to get back to what it once was, the people who live here have to stay here. And it would all start with funding Southern Illinois University Carbondale and the rest of our public universities. And don't forget freezing the state's sky-high property taxes. But that's a story for another day. It's time for lawmakers to have some real sense of urgency, the same urgency the rest of the Illinois people are feeling. The leaders of this state, whoever and wherever you are, need to lock themselves in a room and come up with a full, balanced budget agreement. If that can't be done, then shame on you, but at least find a way to fund our universities. The state of Illinois cannot afford a brain drain. In reality, it can't afford more draining of any kind. And that concludes the editorial from the Southern Illinois Carbondale paper. I'm now turning to the obituary page, and the first one I see on that page today is for George Bell, Danville. George Bell, 70, of Danville, died on Tuesday, April 4, 2017, at Carle Foundation Hospital. A memorial service will be held from 6 to 7 p.m. on May 30 at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. The next obituary is for Jack Dowers. Jack Dowers, age 64, of Danville, died at 6:03 a.m. Saturday, May 20th, 2017, at Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville, with Rod Goodley officiating. Burial will be in Eugene Cemetery, Eugene, Indiana. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. The next obituary is for Rebecca McIntyre, Hoopston. Rebecca, known as Becky McIntyre, age 67, of Hoopston, died at 11:12 a.m. Sunday, May 21, at Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Memorial services will be at 7 p.m. Wednesday at Antioch Church of Christ, 37604 North 1900 East Road, Rossville. Blurton Funeral Home, 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. And here's an obituary for Randy Schultz, Naples, Florida. Randy Schultz, 72, of Naples, died on Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017, at home. Memorial services will be held at 3 p.m. Thursday at Rubison Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin. Visitation will be from 2 to 3 p.m. Thursday at Rubison's Chapel. The next obituary is for Jack Norman Guthrie, retired colonel. Jack N. Guthrie, age 84, a native of Danville, born August 5, 1932, passed away on May 17, 2017, in Frisco, Texas. Floyd Eugene Boyer, age 87, of rural Williamsport, died at 10:20 p.m. Saturday, May 20, 2017, at Carmel Health and Living Center, Carmel, Indiana. Funeral services will be Saturday, May 27, at 2 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time at Shelby Funeral Home, Covington, with the Bruce Thornsboro officiating. Burial will follow in Mount Hope Cemetery with military honors. Visitation Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at the funeral home. Condolences to the family may be made to the shelbyfuneralhome.com. And the final obituary is for Holly, called Jean Ludwig. Dateline Fithian. Holly, Jean, Ludwig, passed away peacefully at home with his loving family on Friday, May 12, 2017. A celebration of his life will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 27, 2017, at Carol Lair Funeral Home, 1910 East Tyler Street, Athens, Texas. And that concludes the obituaries for today. Looking at the sport page, the headline is Forrest to take over Danville program. For the second time in the past 13 years, a Danville native has answered the call to come back and lead the football program at Danville High School. Marcus Forrest, who grew up in Danville before finishing his high school career at Aurora's Wabansee Valley for B.G. Luke, has been named the newest head coach for the Vikings, taking over for Luke, who stepped down after 39 seasons, 12 at Danville. Here's a quote from Forrest. All I can say is that I'm extremely excited and happy with this opportunity. When you apply for something, you should always expect it to happen, but once it does happen, you are pleasantly surprised. Growing up in Danville and playing for the Lincoln Park Raiders, we used to play our championship games on the high school football field. And playing on that field as a freshman and sophomore, and then coming back as a coach, this is something I always wanted to do. So much so that 9 years ago, Forrest left Baltimore, Maryland, where he was working for the Navy as a recruiter, to come back to Danville. He said, it was a feeling that brought me back here. At that time, I still had grandparents that lived here, but I have a brother in Minnesota, another brother in San Antonio, where my mom is also. Not only did Forrest come back and get a job, VA, doing supportive employment for veterans, he also came on the football staff at Danville. In his 9 years with the Vikings, they've won a pair of undefeated Big 12 conference titles, made 5 playoff appearances, including back-to-back semifinal runs in 2009 and 10. I want to build on what Coach Luke has done, Forrest said. He built pride back in this program that hadn't been there for a while. Well, that's the story of the new football coach at Danville. And here's a story about some champions. Playing for a postseason championship is one of the highlights of any high school athlete. Hoisting a trophy or a plaque into the sky after victory is pure jubilation. On Monday afternoon, the Oakwood Comets claimed the school's 7th regional baseball title with an 8-3 victory over the Salt Fork Storm in the championship game of the IHSA Class 1A Fisher Regional. And while that's a significant accomplishment, there was one at-bat during the 5-run sixth inning for the Comets that drew a great deal of attention from the Oakwood faithful. Noah Rook, who spent more than a month in the hospital because of Bartonella infection, that's cat scratch disease, and acute respiratory failure, drew a walk when the 3-2 pitch from Salt Fork's Wyatt Boyer missed the strike zone. That was one of the greatest feelings in my life, said first-year Oakland coach Ryan McFarland. A month ago, no one knew what was going to happen in his life. For him to have an opportunity to get an at-bat in the game and draw a walk was amazing. So that's a victory for Oakland and a victory for Mr. Rook. And finally, from the high school baseball playoffs, the Tigers beat the Buffs in 5. This is from Paris. Even a run as good as Georgetown Ridge Farm Chrisman baseball had this year has got to end sometime. The fashion of how it ended, however, may have not been the result or the place the Buffaloes were looking for. Paris, which has a 28-5 overall record, dominated Georgetown with a 22-6 record, 11-1 in 5 innings in an IHSA Class 2 regional final at Laker Stadium in Paris on Monday evening, rescheduled from Saturday morning due to inclement weather. The Tigers' mercy ruled the Vermilion Valley Conference champions for the first time this season, belting 13 hits off of the Buffalo's pitching staff. Well, that concludes our look at the baseball page. Well, here's the letters to Annie column. Husband should tell his parents to stop with all of the advice. Dear Annie, I've read your advice column off and on for a while and am excited to see you have a Facebook page that you post things to. I'd like your advice, as I have 2 in-laws who have sent me various columns of yours that feature letters from people whose situation they think mirror my situation. Though I appreciate their wanting to offer your recommendations, their perspective on what my husband and I are facing is rarely accurate. They're almost always off base when it comes to knowing what is really going on. What ends up happening is that I become irritated that they are meddling in our lives, and it causes hurt feelings, as well as having problems between my husband and me. What is your advice to in-laws who want to offer advice, and what is your advice to me on how to handle them and prevent them from interfering in the future? Signed, Jay. Dear Jay, unsolicited advice is unheeded at best and offensive at worst. Perhaps you should send them a column about meddlesome in-laws straining a marriage. All kidding aside, of course, their not-so-subtle hints are annoying. The phrase, too many cooks, comes to mind. Your husband needs to be the one to intervene by speaking with his parents. He should tell them that this marriage is just between you and him, and it is up to the two of you and no one else to find the right recipe. And one more letter. Dear Annie, this is in response to the recent letter from Sad Nana with so much to be thankful for. Her husband is dying and her children are helping with hospice care. Under Medicare, she may be entitled to the hospice benefit, which entitles more than just a weekly hospice nursing visit. She needs help from a home health aide, and she may be able to get one through this benefit. The aide would bathe him, dress him, help get him up or down, make his bed, clean his room, throw in a load of laundry, and so on. She also may be entitled to a social worker for assistance with other community resources and emotional support for her and her children. Hospice volunteers can come during certain time hours, so the writer, Sad Nana, would know they are coming and could get out of the house for her own appointments, go for a walk, or just take a nap, as she is probably sleep-deprived. Many families benefit from a hospice chaplain, someone who is used to dealing with the spiritual issues surrounding death and dying, which your own clergy may be uncomfortable discussing. I'm sad to hear that the needs of the writer Sad Nana and her family are not being met by hospice. Hospice care is a wonderful benefit that Medicare and most insurance programs offer at the end of life. It supports patients and families. And Annie writes, Dear Retired, I'm printing your letter in case anyone in a similar situation has not considered or looked into the possibility of home hospice care. Thank you for writing. Here's an announcement about a plan from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank to do a giveaway in Ridge Farm. The Iroquois Federal Foundation and Eastern Illinois Food Bank are teaming up to distribute a truckload of food from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank to hungry area families. The distribution will be at 10 to 11:30 on June 3rd at Wayne Blakeney Community Building at Ward Park in Ridge Farm. That's at 106 East Pilot Street. All Vermilion County residents who meet income eligibility criteria are welcome, according to a release. Those attending are asked to bring bags or boxes to transport food. The distribution is part of the Food Bank's Food Mobile program, a system of mobile food pantries designed to help bring nutritious food to areas of chronic or extreme need. Through the program, local companies and organizations are invited to contribute toward a one-day distribution of food and optionally participate in the distribution process. The cost to partner with the food bank on a food mobile distribution is $3,000. Data released by Feeding America, the nation's network of food banks, shows 14% of people in eastern Illinois are considered food insecure, which means they sometimes lack adequate access to food. More shockingly, 20% of children are food insecure in America Hunger Studies map. All eligible residents of Vermilion County needing food are welcome to attend the Food Mobile distribution. To be eligible, a household must have an income at or below To be eligible, a household must have an income at or below 185% of the federal poverty level, or approximately $3,746 per month for a family of four. Full eligibility criteria are listed below. Other area food mobile distributions may be found at the food bank's website, www.eifoodbank.org. Just to repeat the schedule for that, this is going to be a mobile food bank in Ridge Farm from 10 to 11:30 a.m. on June 3rd at Wayne Blakeney Community Building at Ward Park, 106 East Pilot Street. This is Don saying that this will conclude the reading of the commercial news for Tuesday, May 23rd, and I look forward to reading with you again at some future time. Goodbye for now.